This is Mishmash, a weekly conversation where we try to unjumble an important and sometimes under the radar statewide story that affects you. I'm Shayna Roth.
And I'm Zach Orchow.
This week saw former State House Speaker Lee Chatfield charged with 13 felonies related to alleged unlawful spending out of his nonprofit fund, political action committee, and taxpayer-funded travel benefit while a legislator. Zach, how significant is this moment that we are in right now?
Well, this is a landmark case for state government, in my assessment. For years, the worst kept secret in Lansing has been the lack of oversight and accountability in nonprofit and campaign funds, particularly these nonprofit funds that can accept unlimited contributions and never have to reveal their donors. Let me repeat that. Never have to reveal their donors. Could be hundreds of thousands of dollars. There's nominal oversight of political action committees, but state law gives the Secretary of State no investigatory powers beyond a basic trust type setup, where if they become aware of an issue, they'll look into it. Otherwise, it's just, we accept it. So with these dynamics, what could possibly go wrong, right? Well, Lee Chatfield allegedly showed, surprise, a lot can go wrong.
So much can go wrong. Yes, the allegations are that he used his nonprofit to pay more than $100,000 in personal credit card bills and fund a lavish lifestyle, which included frequent travel, fine dining, and much more. Chatfield allegedly used one of his PACs to pay no-show employees. You might have heard about them from The Sopranos. I know that's where I heard that term for the first time, which were members of his family, who would then kick back part of those funds to Chatfield for his personal use. And he allegedly claimed the reimbursement all legislators can claim for travel between their home and Lansing on many occasions where he never made the trip.
And that was a lot of mileage, considering he was essentially traveling between Lansing and Mackinac City. And for years, warnings have abounded that the legislature and governor needed to pass new laws requiring legislators with nonprofit funds to disclose those donors. And shocker, legislators and governors have ignored those recommendations.
Shocking again. So we asked Senate Majority Leader Winnie Brinks about the Chatfield charges and whether this would finally push the legislature to act on nonprofit funds. And here's part of what she had to say.
We will learn a lot from this. And now that we know the details, we'll take a look at what can be done to ensure that there's just a smaller chance that those kinds of things can happen, for sure. This just seems like another one of those things where we are living with laws that really need to receive a second look because of clearly the misuse of these resources for things that they were never intended for. So we'll take a look at the bill package that's in the House. We will also just evaluate it based on what we have learned now that we've seen these charges. And we're prepared to figure out what we can learn there.
Chatfield is actually the second former Michigan House Speaker charged with corruption in the past year. Zach, is this the moment that finally gets Lansing's attention?
Shayna, if these charges don't prompt reform, I really don't know what will. I mean, this is a pretty bad situation, to say the least. But historically, legislators from both parties have loathed the idea of subjecting themselves to more scrutiny. Look at the puny penalties and vast loopholes in the laws we do have regulating campaign finance and lobbying.
And until the laws are improved, we're going to have to keep relying on watchdog reporting about what our lawmakers are really doing. So make sure you're subscribing to your local newspaper, Gongwer, and of course, public radio. Well, we have much more from Senator Brinks on this topic and so many others. We touched on a lot of different things. We'll be right back after this break. We are joined now by the leader of the Michigan Senate, Senate Majority Leader Winnie Brinks of Grand Rapids, my current home city. I'm currently in Grand Rapids while Senator Brinks is in Lansing. She is the first Democrat in that role in more than 40 years. Senator Brinks, welcome to Mishmash.
Thank you.
Senator, it's great to have you here. This week saw Democrats on the other side of the Capitol in the House win special elections to reestablish majority control in that chamber and full Democratic control of the legislature. So besides completing the upcoming fiscal year budget, now that the House is going to be back to full power in the coming days, and the budget, of course, is always a top priority in the spring, what are your policy priorities before the legislature adjourns for the summer?
Yeah, you nailed it, though, with talking about the budget. That's obviously job one, and hope to get that done in June, well before folks are anticipating being back in their districts. So that's for sure on our schedules, right? It's taking up most of the time and effort in our committee time, meeting time, all of it. But we still have things out there, right? We've passed a number of bills that are sitting over in the House waiting action. So we're really pleased that they'll be at full strength. There will be a bit of a learning curve for those new members on a couple of those policy areas, I'm sure. So we're hopeful that we'll be able to have some robust conversation about what can move over there. So we've had a lot of conversation about some key policy ideas from the Senate that we'd love to see movement on, including things like Prescription Drug Affordability Board. We've got auto no-fault legislation over there that would help fix some of the unintended consequences and harm that was done with the previous iteration of that law. So those are two big things that we've got on our radar, but we've got a handful of other things that we lovingly refer to as cats and dogs here over in the legislature. And so we'll see some of those other things move too. They might not be huge press release kinds of items, but we'll begin more robust conversations about what can get a vote over there. And we're engaged in those conversations with Speaker Tate and his team on an ongoing basis. But now we'll be much more concerted about those things.
Senator Brinks, last year saw Democrats in control of the legislature for the first time in 40 years. I know we've been saying this a lot. They passed a slew of long-sought Democratic priorities. This year, however, has been different, in part because the House Democrats haven't had majority since November. Both the House and Senate, particularly the House, have met less than usual for voting sessions. Are you concerned that Democrats are not able to take advantage of the opportunity that they've had, or that they're not taking full advantage of this opportunity?
Yeah, I'm not concerned about the pace at all. You mentioned in part this is because of the situation over in the House, but it's more than just being down two members. We've had particularly difficult time getting Republican cooperation in the House, and so that continues to be an uphill battle. Here in the Senate, we've had a little bit more success with that, and I think we've had I would certainly call it a strong ethic around attendance and showing up and really doing the work in the Senate. And we've been able to continue committee meetings and have a lot of really great conversation about policy items alongside our budget conversations. Last year, there was a sense of urgency, of course, because of the 40 years of pent-up policy that we finally had an opportunity to start working through. Naturally, we had a large number of immediate priorities that there was nearly 100% alignment on among Democrats. And after you kind of check off the first 10 or 20 of those items, things just require a little more work and conversation. So we still have a long list of things that we'd like to do. Many of those things require us to really sit down and hash out any differences we have to count our votes. And with slim majorities, it's just incredibly important to allow that time for those bills to get worked and for us to really make any modifications we need and to move quality legislation. It's always important to do it right, not just fast.
Senator, the big news this week was the Attorney General charging former House Speaker Lee Chatfield with 13 different felonies, basically alleging he used his nonprofit fund, his political action committees, and even his travel reimbursement from the House, almost was like a personal piggy bank, and funded a jet set lifestyle for himself. Will this prompt the Senate to pass legislation requiring legislators to register these funds with the state, disclose donors, and disclose the amounts of those donations to those nonprofits?
So, first of all, I mean, it's just flabbergasting how quickly that former Speaker Chatfield was able to do so much damage. And it's pretty incredible to read through the announcement that the Attorney General made yesterday and to really see all of the ways in which he was allegedly, I'll say, until this is all decided in court, but clearly the wrongdoing seems to be very evident from our perspective, from my perspective. So we will learn a lot from this. And now that we know the details, we'll take a look at what can be done to ensure that there's just a smaller chance that those kinds of things can happen for sure. I feel like this is another one of those things where we're cleaning up a Republican mess. Right, we've seen time after time in the last year or two where we've seen charges brought against former Republican leaders for abuse of these funds in various ways. We did a lot of work undoing some of the things that they set in place. Some of it when I first came to the legislature or right before that. Restoring workers' rights and, you know, people's ability to make their own reproductive health decisions, to making sure that schools are adequately funded, and we're talking about opportunity for everybody. This just seems like another one of those things where we are living with laws that really need to receive a second look because of clearly the misuse of these resources for things that they were never intended for. So we'll take a look at the bill package that's in the House. We will also just evaluate it based on what we have learned now that we've seen these charges. And we're prepared to figure out what we can learn there. Again, it's important for us to do this right. And to provide that accountability so that people can have the faith that they need to in their legislators. But I was incredibly shocked. There are people here who are really good at the work, who care about their communities, who have these funds and use them appropriately for social welfare purposes. My staff and I work together to provide, you know, hygiene bags for people in need. And we put together 300 bags. And, you know, that effort was paid for with funds from an account like this. We've helped with voter registration. We've helped do things that are just genuinely nonpartisan, good for our communities, that help people engage civically. And that's really what their intention is for. It also helps us do things like, you know, attend conferences for professional benefit, right? So there's a multitude of very appropriate uses. And I think the vast majority of legislators comply with appropriate uses for this. But to the extent that there's a gap in our law that allows for such an incredible abuse of this tool is very concerning. So there's no question we'll be taking a look at it.
I'm curious as far as how common these types of nonprofits are. You mentioned that you have a fund. Is that considered a nonprofit? And I guess how many other lawmakers have these types of funds?
Yeah, I wouldn't know the answer to how many of, you know, the legislature has is associated with these. So as you know, these are not our funds. They are funds that are managed by a board, but they are associated with a legislator often. So there should be safeguards in place and things that the board is doing to ensure that the dollars that they approve at a, you know, in terms of expenses, there's bylaws and there's policies and procedures about how those funds are to be expended. That was clearly not happening and nobody realized it in some cases. So there's a right way to do things. There's just too much room for people to get away with not doing it right at this point. So we'll take a look at it. But and as for how many, I'm not sure.
When you say we'll take a look at it, I mean, at a basic level, do you think that the names and amounts of donations have to be disclosed? I mean, even if, you know, someone's doing everything the right way, I mean, you know, there are people who want to gather favor for the issues they support or issues before state government. and they could and maybe have given various legislators hundreds of thousands of dollars, or I should say these nonprofit funds, hundreds of thousands of dollars that someone like Elite Chatfield allegedly used to pay his own personal credit card bills and travel and so forth.
Yeah. What we want to do is make sure that there's space to do legitimate activities that enhance our ability to serve our constituents, right? And we want to close the opportunity for this bad actor and these nefarious behaviors that don't have anything to do with the work that we're sent here to do. And we want to make sure that we put those things in place, not just for the Lee Chatfields of the world or the Mike Shirkeys or whomever else has done these things. But we want to make sure that we are doing that so that people can trust that their legislature and their legislators are working in their best interest, because that's why I ran. And I think that most people here want to do some good. We may disagree on what that good is exactly for each of our communities or which issues we want to work on. But in general, I've just had most of my legislative experiences and interactions with people are not with folks who have acted like Lee Chatfield has. So we need to make sure that there's space to support good work here and to do it legally and above board, and whatever kind of transparency we need to have to make sure that we prevent the bad actors and create the opportunity for us to serve better. Those are the kinds of solutions that I'm interested in.
What about the Michigan Campaign Finance Act? Do you think it's time to give the Secretary of State the tools to audit the accuracy of what candidates and PACs report? I mean, currently it's just kind of accepted on face value. Do you think that needs to change?
I think there's certainly room for improvement. Exactly what it looks like is something that would require a lot of work and a lot of I think that's something that would require a lot of homework, so to speak, so that we could get to a spot where we need to be. I think there's a lot more accountability there than there is with these other types of accounts. So I think I would rather focus first and foremost on the ones that we've seen come to light as being abused at this point. But I wouldn't take that off the table. And certainly you saw it when we were and perhaps you reported on the personal financial disclosure forms, right? There are questions about the Lobby Act. What is, what is something that needs to be reported? Is there a gray area? You know, if I had food with an entire group of people and there were 20 of us there, do you divide by 20? Are we required to report things that are, for instance, something that we are expected to know the value of that we receive, but there's no possible way we know because we, that expense was paid by the person hosting the event. So we don't have the receipt. Maybe the person hosting the event doesn't understand how many people were there or even know the total expenses. If they're not required to report it, it gets really difficult for us as legislators to know the value and then report something. So at the end of the day, I guess what I'm saying is, yes, there has to be transparency. There must be accountability. We can do better. We also have to make it so that it's possible for legislators to know what's expected of them and to be able to comply. We can make a really strict law, but if it's literally impossible to know some of those things, I'm a little hesitant to say that that has to happen. So all of this to say, again, it's really important that we take a look at this and do things that actually prevent harm and actually create more accountability and transparency, not just what feels good because we want to get back at somebody or because it just, we can't presume that everybody here is acting like Lee Chatfield. That is clearly not the case. So we need to think about this in a very common sense and straightforward fashion. And I think that there's plenty of room for improvement. There's lots of topics on the table. Exactly what it looks like, I'm not sure yet.
So, Senator, Republicans are making illegal immigration a big priority, as you know. They've been pushing very hard late that the killing of Ruby Garcia in Grand Rapids by a man who was not in the United States legally is an example of the dangers of a porous border. How do you respond to that?
It's an interesting tactic that they're taking. I think, you know, they're going straight to fear. That's frankly very damaging for our communities. And the bottom line is the Republicans in Congress walked away from a bipartisan deal, one that was worked on diligently by a bipartisan group of legislators for many months, and that the Republicans had expressed support for prior to Donald Trump getting on the phone and telling them that he didn't like it because he wanted to win. And he thought it was useful for him to have this problem endure. I don't think there's an American out there who believes that things are going well at the border and that we couldn't tighten things up and make sure that we are doing a better job as a nation. So I implore our congressional members to stay at the table if they are part of the solution. And for those who have walked away, to get back there and do their job and make it possible for us to have an orderly border that allows people in who are supposed to be allowed in, and then does the ensures that there is due process for the procedures that they need to go through to do this all legally. Right now, that's not happening, and it's incredibly disappointing. So for us as a state, it's clearly an issue that needs to be solved by the federal government. We'll do our best to ensure that the needs of our communities are met in that context. But I cannot urge the Congress strongly enough to pay attention to this and to do what needs to be done.
And then, Senator, just following up on that, you recently, I believe, were quoted as saying that sanctuary cities are not really a thing. It's a term that Republicans have been using for political purposes. But East Lansing City Council, where I live, they did adopt a resolution instructing city employees and the police department not to work with ICE on enforcing federal immigration law. Putting aside the terminology, is that an appropriate activity for a local government or action for a local government to take?
So again, I would say cities and counties, they have their own governing bodies and they will do what they will do. There is no legal definition for what they're talking about or terming a sanctuary city or a sanctuary county. So the interpretation of what East Lansing would like to do or be in terms of how it relates to the people it serves is up to them. But clearly, again, this is just a distraction from the real problem. If people are concerned about criminal activity or drug activity in our country or in our state or in their community, the problem is not whether or not there's a sanctuary city. The problem is that there's not a solution at the border. And as a state, whoever is here, whoever is in our communities, we need to make sure that they have an opportunity to be healthy, that they are accountable if there is any activity that is against the law. And that's what those cities and counties are ensuring. And that's their first priority.
So the Senate has passed several major items that are awaiting action in the House, addressing care for those catastrophically injured in auto crashes, a prescription drug pricing board, economic incentives. Are you concerned that the House being up for election this year is making them a little bit more cautious about taking on some of these controversial topics?
I'm very hopeful that they'll evaluate the bills that are in front of them on the merits of the policies in those bills. It's always a challenge when we are in an election year and things can get weaponized. But frankly, our job here is to do what we think is best for the constituents of our state. And that includes this year, it includes next year and ongoing years. So we try really hard not to be too reactive to, you know, the news of the day and to do things that are rash or politically motivated. We're very concerned about governing in a responsible way. And as we send various bill packages and have sent them over to the House, we continue to have conversations with them. I would say I'm much more concerned about talking about the policy, ensuring all of the members over there are informed about what's in the bills and that they see the merits of the policy and that they're good for the people that we serve. It always comes down to whether or not this is good policy. It's always great when it's good policy and it's good politics for us. But I think you'll see from the things that we have taken on, we are really focused on doing things that are good for people. And they're also very popular with people. And that list is really, really long. So we'll continue to do that. I think the Prescription Drug Affordability Board, the response to trying to make adjustments to the auto no-fault law, those are two great examples where people have come to us with really concrete things about how their lives could be better. We know that policies could be different to be more responsive to the things that we have heard from our constituents. We've seen significant support for some of these concepts in the past with legislators, particularly with the auto no-fault fix. And so we're optimistic that we can work through any differences. But again, those are not things that I think are held up because it's an election year. I think that those are things that we need to just work the policy on and help people understand where we're at.
Democrats are really pushing the recent legislation to legalize contractual surrogacy in Michigan as this new front in reproductive rights. And it kind of is, at least for Michigan. I mean, we are one of the last states to legalize surrogacy. Is this going to have the same resonance as the abortion issue itself did a few years ago in the last election? Do you think this is going to keep people invested in this topic?
Yeah, I think that this has really gotten the attention of our constituents, in part because our law was so antiquated and so unique in the nation that it was not allowing people to build their families in ways that work for them. And that's just an incredibly personal and important topic for so many of our constituents. I think there's countless people that each of us know, maybe not countless, but each of us know somebody who has been impacted by fertility issues. And having this tool be available is just something that people really find value in. So that on its face is, it's very gratifying to be able to move this legislation finally. I would say, though, that this is another page in the same book that we saw last time. We see people who want to diminish your rights to that kind of self-determination when it comes to building a family, when it comes to your reproductive health. And we see us as Democrats here in the Senate and in the House and in the governor's office affirming people's ability to build their family in the way that works best for them. And I think that will resonate with voters. People don't like it when you take away their rights and they will let their voices be heard. And just like abortion rights and reproductive rights, there are so often decisions that are inherently incredibly personal. But there are so many situations that people have experienced that are tragic, you know, severe diagnosis or diagnosis of severe fetal abnormalities. Things like that, right? People need to know that they can make their own decisions that will save their lives. If they're a mom who has high blood pressure and preeclampsia, an unplanned pregnancy with an out-of-control medical condition can be fatal. That's not going to be obvious to some folks sitting in chairs here in the legislature. So I believe that you will see this resonate with voters. Nobody wants to be in a position where they need to have infertility treatment or use IVF. But if they are, they certainly don't want their legislators and their congressional people or the president of the United States saying, you can't do that. So I'm confident that we are on the right side of this issue, the right side of history, the right side of the electorate, but most certainly on the right side of being able to preserve health and well-being for the people that we represent. And that is always a top priority.
And if any of our listeners think that this topic doesn't affect them because they don't know anybody who's struggled with fertility, they do now. I have written extensively for Slate about my struggles with infertility and my daughter being born via IVF. So now all of our listeners know. Senator Winnie Brinks, thank you so much for joining us here today on Mishmash.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
Thanks again to our guest, Senator Winnie Brinks from my neck of the woods, Grand Rapids. Mishmash is produced by WDET, Detroit's NPR station, in collaboration with Gongwer News Service. Mishmash is hosted and produced by me, Shayna Roth, and Gongwer's Zach Gorchow and Alethea Kasbin.
Additional production and editing by Hearns Laguerre Jr. Mixing, mastering, and music by Sam Bobian.
Our digital team is Dave Kim, Sophia Joswiak, and Jenny Sherman. Our news director is Jerome Vaughn, and our podcast manager is David Lyons. As always, if you listen to this show and want to support it, you can do so by leaving us a review or a comment wherever you listen. You can subscribe or follow us on Spotify, Apple, YouTube, wherever you get your podcasts.
Tell your friends about how much you've learned from Mishmash and send them a link. And learn more about Gongwer News Service at gongwer.com.
Remember, we're produced by a public radio station, which means we are listener-supported. So if you really, really like this show, you can support WDET by going to wdet.org/give. We'll talk to you next week.